I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night. Yet another Yellow Jackets edition. Courtney Eaton.
Hi.
Hello. Oh, my God. I have so many questions.
Okay.
Don't
stress. I might
not
have answers.
Don't stress. Honestly, I'll respect the fact that you don't have answers to some of them, because that's a big part of the reason why Lottie is one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. She keeps me on my toes, and this speaks to how good your performance is. Whenever I could think of her mind going one way or the other on something, or maybe even two thoughts existing at once, you justify both, and that's not an easy thing to do.
Wow, thank you. Thanks.
Job very well done. This right here is the most stressful part of Collider Ladies Night.
Okay.
This is the Dice Tower. You get three rolls on the tower, and each number corresponds to a random question I have, and
that is
where our conversation begins.
Leaving it up to luck.
Yes.
Okay, what number?
Just like the deck of cards. I see an eight. Okay, I like eight. Eight is high-low. I want one audition high, but then also one audition low, and what you learn from that low that you are able to apply to future auditions.
I have a really good low. Maybe I'll start with high. I don't know. I don't think it's as big as, like, a special job that I went into, but I think when I was most confident in myself going into the room that I walked out and I was like, oh, I don't remember what happened because I just had fun with it. And the low of that is I was up for Star Wars, and I think it was with the Daisy Ridley character, Rey, and I completely flopped and just had like a panic attack halfway through like the take. But it kind of worked for the scene, but no one really, I think they could tell that it wasn't acting, and so it just completely did not go well. And I was really young, and I walked out, and, like, normally you call your agents after, and they're like, how'd it go? Tell us everything. What was the vibe? And I'm like, it didn't go well. And they'd flown me out from Australia, and, yeah, that one, like, haunts me forever.
Things like that are meant to be, though, because if you were involved in that, who knows if your schedule would have been open to get this opportunity.
True.
I'm a big believer that all that stuff is meant to be.
I can't
believe how many Rey audition stories I've heard on this show.
Really?
I feel like the last one I can remember might have been Aza Gonzalez. She was telling me about the same audition.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was, like, a crazy one. I ended up, like, crying in front of J.J. Abrams, and I have to, like, bump into him one time and be like, I'm not insane. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so curious, though, because I think that's a really important part of the audition process. Mm-hmm. What did he do when that happened? Were the people in the room there and able to support you so that, you know, I know it was disappointing when you walked out of the room, but it could have been worse if they were not receptive and warm about
it. No, they were really supportive, and I think they were like, you know, try use it, and we know you're doing it, and we can take a breath, but I do think it was better to keep pushing with it at that time, because I think if I had stopped to think about it, I would have imploded a lot more. But yeah, they were really sweet about it.
Makes me happy to hear that.
Yes.
And you learn from those things.
I do.
And then you get stronger and stronger, and then you book stuff like Yellow Jackets, which was meant for you. Next roll in the tower.
Did you get this made?
We did. It's so meant to look like Jurassic Park.
I love it. Yeah.
All right. We are on to number two. Ooh, I'm so happy. So I believe all of you have rolled this. I know Samantha and Liv rolled this. So this is survival skills. So you is in real you. You are on a plane. It goes down in the wilderness. I want to know your greatest asset, the thing you bring to the group that'll help everybody survive. But then I also want the greatest weakness, the thing about you that will do everybody in.
My greatest weakness seems like a theme today of just like my emotions and my brain, which is why I think I relate to Lottie so much, is probably what would be my undoing out there. And then my strength, I'm good at like looking out and after people. So I think
just like Lottie.
Oh my God, yeah. So even though sometimes I can't look after myself in the way that I would like to, I could do it for others. Maybe I'd be the little
That seems to be where Lottie is at exactly right
Lottie,
now.
I am Lottie, just minus the like cult and maybe some of the other things, but I'm just, pretty close to her.
Just because this is coming to mind, because one of my answers to this question is like I would screw everyone over because eventually I'd run out of contact solution and then I wouldn't be able to see. I have noticed in the behind the scenes videos that you all have other people putting the contact lenses in for you.
Yes. I don't know if we're actually, like, technically allowed to do it ourselves. Because I asked one time and they were like, no. But also they're the big ones that, like, sclera ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're a bit difficult to put in. But it's always hilarious watching each other get them in because you're just like,
Yeah, I don't get nerd. Like, I've been putting contact lenses in since I was 13 years old. And then that video popped up on, like, my TikTok feed or something. And I said to myself, like, I don't know if I'd be able to let someone else do that to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of comfy. And I feel like I'm a person that can, like, touch and mess around with my eye to begin with. So I don't mind the idea of someone else doing it. Okay. I don't know.
I'm impressed. The bloody contacts are incredible looking.
They're crazy. Every time I would be like talking to, I remember when Liv wore them in the first season after the wolf tack, I couldn't look them in the eye because I was like, my eyes are watering just looking at you. And then this season I had people doing that with me and I was like, just look.
You had that and then some. We are going to get to that. One more roll in the tower for you.
Three
is a good one. I actually haven't had the opportunity to ask this to anyone. It's called scene swap. If you could role swap with someone else in the ensemble, either timeline, specifically to play one scene, what would it be?
I think it would either be Shauna or Natalie in either timelines, but specific scenes, I don't know.
I've gotten very hung up on the idea of all I want is some sort of like, I don't know, web-based exercise where the younger versions swap roles with the adult versions and we can just see how things might change.
That would be crazy and insane. I want that too. Scene-wise.
I have a scene for you.
Okay,
I came up with the answer really quickly. So if you play adult Natalie, one of my favorite performance beats of Juliet is the moment with the cocaine.
Like, yeah, that is a fucking amazing
that is
scene.
Like a hugely emotional and physical performance, and I just love seeing people swing big with stuff like that.
So
do
I.
Very curious.
And I weirdly love scenes like that. Like, my other pick was, like, the birth scene for some reason. Like, I just want heavy stuff.
That is a lot.
Yeah, so that old, the cocaine scene, I don't know what that says about me.
That episode is something else. I still,
yeah, I
like, so many crazy things have happened since then, even, but I still, that episode I can't
I
get
know.
Out of my head.
I love how we've all kind of forgot that we ate Jackie in episode two, and, like, like, that's the least crazy thing that's happened this season.
The craziest thing that I've heard in one of these ladies' night conversations was someone mentioned to me that while you were shooting the birth scene material, that a card got wiped or something and footage was lost. And, like, as though I didn't think that that material was challenging enough to know that something like that happened, everyone rallied, did it again, and it still came out that good.
Yeah, so
that's incredible.
Did amazing. I don't think it was at fault of anyone. I think one of the cards was corrupt. But I remember Sophie and I lived together for the second season. I remember when we found out we had to reshoot that, and Sophie was like, and I was like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You did it once. You can do it twice, and this time it's going to be better. And not that you can even do better. Like, she's amazing.
I'll just say it again because I can. Emmy nomination. Emmy nomination. She's not here, so we can say as much as we want.
So she can't, like, freak out. Every time anyone brings it up, she just, like, shuts down and is so... Yeah, she's the best.
She deserves the most.
I get it.
So here I'm, like, bringing a question that I like to end with up to the top because it's reminding me of this. So you're actually getting a different First Ladies Night question and not the traditional one. But something I've gotten in the habit of asking a lot lately is for people to tell me about something they did that makes them say to themselves, like, damn, I'm proud of that. Because I feel like we're all really good at giving each other awards, but nobody gives themselves the praise that they might deserve.
That's a good point.
It's Yellow Jackets or anything you've ever done, what is a scene that you could look back on and say to yourself, I am proud of what I did there?
I would say, actually, not just a scene, but the whole film. I did a film with Brittany Snow and Thomas Mann.
Parachute.
Yeah, that went to South By. And I have never had, like, that film kind of changed my brain chemistry and, like, my, I don't know, I was, for the first time, really proud of myself. I, like most actors, have a hard time watching my stuff, but... I think I was just so proud of what everyone did and the message we were doing and just everything it encompassed. I felt proud, like, overall and my performance.
I love hearing that. Yeah. Brittany is a past Ladies Night guest, so I'm always eager to continue supporting any way, anywhere I can. I'm so excited to see that. Now for the actual first question on Ladies Night. What was the movie, the performance, personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor?
This is crazy because I watched some of your ones just to prep myself because I get really stressed with, like, questions and not having answers. And this one is interesting because I was really shy as a kid and didn't enjoy acting at school. And I never wanted to be an actor, but I was really, and still I'm pretty, like, go with the flow person. If you tell me this, I'll be like, I'll try it out. So I don't think I realized I wanted to be an actor until I got on my first film and set and was just like, oh, this is what acting is. It's fun and it's, like, kind of like a therapy and you get to run around and be weird and no one judges you. So I think, yeah, on Mad Max is the first time.
Okay, so I'm backtracking here because I know the modeling opportunities came first and I was busy reading about how at Vivian Models you were encouraged to take an acting class to help you with your modeling. So it made me curious about a lot of things. One, what is an acting tool or technique that does, in fact, help when you're modeling? But then also, is there anything that you learned in that class that made you think, like, huh, that might be an avenue for me to pursue too?
I can't remember specifically, but I think the acting class came after my first, like, tape I had to do for Mad Max. So I don't know if I was really using it for modeling. It was more in the sense of, I don't know how to act, and if I have to do another tape, I have to have some type of knowledge and skill about it. But I think modeling helps with acting in a way that you aren't so scared of the camera anymore. Like, I notice if I haven't shot anything for a while or even done a photo shoot in a while, I'll, like, clam up and not know what to do. So I think that kind of helped me be comfortable in front of the camera and just kind of forget that it's there. But Miles Pollard, who taught that class, was amazing, and he helped me do my tapes. And, what was the other part of that question?
That's a good question. That's a good question for me. That was the tools that you were able to... Oh, was there anything you learned in that class or maybe an exercise you did that showed you that, like, yes, acting is a craft that could be a good thing for me to pursue further?
Not necessarily, because I think... I don't know if... There probably is, but I haven't analyzed it that much, but I think it just opened something up in me that let me, like, release in a way. And maybe that was the skill or tool.
Here's a better question to get at that. Of all of your earliest opportunities in film, television, whatever, what was the moment on set when, I guess, you first discovered that acting was a creative itch that you needed to keep scratching, where, like, you tapped into a character on such a level that you knew you needed to keep chasing that feeling?
Yeah, I specifically remember the scene. It was in Mad Max when I'm running back to the warlord. And I'm, like, screaming and have makeup, like, smeared over my face and the girls are chasing after me. And I, like, hit and tapped into something that day that I was just like, ooh, I think I want to, like, cry on screen forever. I don't know. Like, no, that makes it sound sad. But it was really, like, empowering. Yeah, I think it was that scene.
That's a very special film.
Yeah.
That was my number one film of 2015.
Oh, really?
Yes. I have watched it more times than I can count. It is also a highly unique production. I have never heard of any other film on this planet being shot that way. So yeah. Two-parter on that. What is something about the way Mad Max was shot that now looking back makes you say, I'm so glad my first opportunity was on that set with those people working that way?
I think that it was kind of... that it was so immersive. We were in the middle of the desert. Everything was shot at speed. A lot of people were, like, method in a way. And it just, like, was a whole world that I kind of got to live in, and it didn't really especially feel like a set. And I was quite young, too. I was, like, 16, 17. But, yeah.
That's a lot at that age. My God, what I was doing at that age, I couldn't handle that. All right, the second part of that question. So, again, that is a very specific way of making a film. When you went on to your next film, what was, like, an adjustment or a learning curve where, like, you thought everything was like Mad Max, but then all of a sudden you realized the production process could be entirely different?
I learned real quick that I probably will never have an experience like Mad Max again in the same in the casting aspect, in the way we shot it. We shot chronologically. Our prep beforehand, we had some of the most random exercises that we did that I don't think any other film would do. But I think what threw me off was shooting in chronological order, and that most films don't do that.
A blessing.
Yeah.
A blessing.
Yeah.
Now, just because I'm curious, what is an example of an exercise that served you well on Mad Max that would not necessarily apply to any other story?
I think George did a really good job of making sure that us as the wives were all connected. And we worked with Eve Ensler, and we did, like, some body movements and just talking and just sat in a circle and talked about life and being women. And I think that really, like, added a layer to it that was, like, amazing.
I'm, like, going down a silly route now, but... With all of those actors on that set that you got to work with, if you were in a Yellow Jackets type situation and you could team up with two of them, who would you pick that would help you survive out in the wilderness best?
I don't know if they would help me survive best, but Abby Lee, she's like my big sister. We're really close, so 100% her. And then either Charlize, because she's just like a badass and will like...
Wait until you see a scene she has in Fast 10. My
really?
God, it's one of the best fight scenes I've seen in quite some time.
Was it Blonde? What's that?
Oh, Blonde, yeah. Atomic Blonde.
Atomic Blonde, yeah. So maybe her or Nick Holt, because he's just funny and he'd make me laugh.
He's so good at
everything.
He's
sweet.
Have you seen The Menu?
Yes.
I've got that bird in my brain also because I think that was today's Framed. Do you play Framed?
No.
It's like a Wordle spinoff where they give you frames of a film and you get six of them and, like, the sooner you guess what the movie is, the better. And
I need that.
Thankfully, this will run at a later date, so I'm not spoiling Frame for anybody, but today the answer was The Menu.
People are really, like, protective of Wordle. Like, if you ruin it for them, your life's
over.
Do
you play Wordle?
Yeah.
I play every single day with my mom, and we have, like, a running document, and, like, we're up to something, like, I guess it's, like, at, like, 150, and she's beating me, and it's driving me nuts. She is 160 or something like that.
God.
But we have an ongoing competition.
I love Word Games. I love is it the New York Times,
Oh, no. Are you going to tell me something that I'm going to get addicted to?
Oh, it's really good.
Oh, where it gives you, like, a whole bunch of letters and you have to make words?
Like, pentagram and stuff.
That's very much right up my alley.
I am obsessed with that one.
My dream game show is to be on Wheel of Fortune. I'd be
make it happen.
Good at that. I sent in an audition form once, and then I missed the email asking me to, like, sign up for the next stage.
No!
I can just submit again, but I was mad at myself for having missed it. All right, let's get into Yellow Jackets full force now.
That was your audition story.
That is my low audition story, and I'll never forgive myself for it. So I know that you originally auditioned for Shauna, so what was the reaction when you found out that you were going to be cast as Lottie instead?
I think, weirdly, I knew when I was going in for Shauna that I wasn't actually auditioning for Shauna. And then, one, amazing character, but I can never see anyone else playing it other than Sophie now. Like, top tier. All of us. Everyone's, like, perfectly cast. But I went in right after when I put my call back for Lottie, and I did one scene, and it was on the theme of Lottie just being kind of creepy, kind of crazy, and then, yeah, then I think I got it, and I felt like I fit better with Lottie.
Okay, so you get that opportunity, then you get the role. At that point, did you know that when season two came around, you would be up to a season regular, or did you think there was any chance that season one could be one and done for the character?
No, because Showtime was really gracious. They offered me a series regular in season one, but because it was my first time doing TV and because I'd come from film, I was... It's daunting to sign on to something for five, 6 years, at least for me at the time. So they were really gracious and let me come on later on as a series regular.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard, like, I feel like usually we hear about actors wanting the opposite, but I very much respect that. Especially when it's a big, ambitious project to be jumping into. So when you start working on the character, of all the scenes in season one, which do you think helped define Lottie? I know things change, but at that point, which helped define Lottie for you the most, where, you know, every scene that you shot after that, you could always refer back to that particular scene to kind of ground you in a way?
It's weirdly the pilot. Lottie's not in the pilot that much, but there's a scene where she's just sitting in her empty house and her maid comes and gives her medication. Beside the medication, that isn't what kind of draws me back to her, but like that emptiness and sadness, but also like comfort she has in herself, weirdly, that's always like the root of Lottie, I feel like. If I think about her, I just kind of see her sitting at that table.
I have so many questions. I'm going to start to dip into theory questions, but first I'll build off that grounding element, especially when you're looking at season two and, you know, maybe some knee-jerk decisions she makes, maybe some changes in how she feels about the wilderness. Do you have to have some sort of anchor or guiding light so that every choice she makes, even if she's changing her mind on things, still feels like it's based in some sort of consistent truth for her?
That was a question.
It feels honestly like a near impossible question to really answer for you, especially because, you know, without her medication, the fact that she's someone who doesn't really feel confident in herself too.
Yeah, I think with Lottie, I kind of take it each scene. It might sound like a cop-out answer, but it's intuitively. I just know when I stand there heading into the scene, I'm like, oh, this is the way it should go. And maybe the writers will come up and be like, lean more this way, lean more that way, because they know things I don't know. But I think if I thought about... I don't know how to explain where how I know what Lottie is supposed to do or, like, what her goal is in those moments, but I just know. That's it. Like, she's...
Honestly, I feel like that is the right answer for a character like this. Otherwise, she doesn't work, and she can't be so many things at once, and you can't justify certain opinion changes that we get this season.
Yeah, I can't make her one thing or lean one way or the other, because then she loses her magic. One of the best things about Lottie is that she, one, is this amazing character, but two, she kind of portrays this idea in the show and this symbolism it's that and a human brain colliding.
Yes, I just love the fact that we all first got obsessed with the symbolism of it all and the supernatural of it all, and now this season is making sure, like, do not forget she is a human being too.
Yeah.
And that's driving a lot of her actions. All right, these are my theory questions.
Oh.
So it's a little more like your own personal backstory. It does not have to be canon, but I did, I asked these to Liv recently, and it made me curious your answers for
Liv's
Lottie,
great
too.
A backstory.
My God. That
Liv
was,
is just the smartest human.
The second they said that, I'm like, uh-oh. Like, I got a lot for you.
Oh, no.
Here's the first one, though. What do you think Lottie misses about home the most, if anything at all?
I don't know if she misses that much. I don't think she wants to be in the wilderness, but I think she has a hard time with her family and relating, and I think it's a pretty empty household and relationship there. I think she's someone that, like, has friends at school, but than maybe surface level. I don't think she has, like, a true best friend. I don't know. I feel like she might just miss, like, I don't know if she has any animals, but, like, I see her in, like, green and walking around.
I'm trying to file away for a question for the very end now okay. that just made me think of. What about, oh, actually, the other thing I was just thinking about is it feels like all of the main characters are in that same situation where I don't know if anyone would have a good answer for what they miss about home most. But I love this season. We got more scenes with Akila, and she's the first person that I've really expressed longing for any specific thing about home and, like, wanting to go back to experience more of that thing. I thought that was a beautiful moment.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, I didn't, her bringing up her backstory and being like,
that's literally the first time that I've thought of that. What about Lottie's future? What do you think it would have held for her had the plane never gone down?
I think Lottie would have found her footing and become independent and maybe started to rely on herself a lot more. I think she would have found a friend or a partner that, like, brought out the best in her. And I think, like, I think her hitting college would have been, like, her coming into her true self.
That's such a beautiful answer.
I think, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like happiness in some area later on. Yeah, so.
I love how much faith you have in her, having, like, a bright future. That makes me happy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now back to some of the darkness here. This is another thing that's more theory. I don't know if you've really thought about it, but let's just say Lottie never ran out of her pills, that there was some sort of, like, magical replenishing happen. Mm-hmm. How do you think her experience in the wilderness and how she behaved and how she worked with the group might have changed?
That's a really good question. Because I'm not always thinking about the medication aspect of it, I don't know how she would do if she was still on them. Because in my brain, or at least the way I talk with the writers and Bart and Ashley, is that she walks that line of, like, does she have a power? Does she have, is it just trauma, or is it that she actually has some mental health, something going on? So I don't know how she would go. I don't think it would be good still.
I don't either. Yeah. My big theory on that is I think it would have been kind of like a recreation of where she fits in like the social group in the pilot episode where, like, she's an important part of the group, but she doesn't step up necessarily in any way.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And that wouldn't serve anybody.
No.
I mean, I'm not sure that some of these things serve the group well, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that. So we already touched on the distrust that she has in herself. Have you ever considered where that might have come from? Is that something that she's just naturally been carrying with her all along? Or, you know, I was thinking a little bit about the flashback, and I think her mother believes that she helped save them, but her father doesn't. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from?
I think it's partly, like, her environment with her parents, but I think it stems from someone that, like, doesn't really feel like they belong, or maybe have anxiety or depression or some type of mental health. I feel like It's funny. I had a therapist one time be like, you talk about your brain like it's like not part of you or it's like your enemy. Not in a sad way.
No, I get it.
I think that's kind of where Lottie sits with her brain and herself. She can give herself to other people and she's very open and big to like, she's an empath. But yeah.
So much of what you just
described. She sounds so depressed.
I feel like a lot of people can relate to that. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a very common thing to be able to talk other people up, but talk yourself down. Like people always say, like, speak to yourself as you would to other people. Mm-hmm. And I know it can be very difficult to do that.
It's a really hard thing to do, but I think it is really empowering when you do do it. But I don't think Lottie's found that yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. The wilderness sound now. This is very, it might be overly specific, another thing you might not have thought of, but have you ever considered what the wilderness might actually sound like in her head, or if it's not actually a literal sound, what it might feel like to her?
I feel like I know what the feeling of it is, because sometimes in scenes, even in like the prayer circle, and I'm talking everyone through the prayer/meditation thing, I don't know, it's like a calming wash, I feel like.
I like that.
Which is funny because the wilderness doesn't seem like it would be a calming sensation of everyone, since it just kind of seems to be wreaking havoc.
I feel like in such a volatile situation like that, though, having any guidance, even if you're not certain of its intentions, mm-hmm. can come with a calming quality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. I'm starting to jump into episodes of season two now. This is another very specific moment here, but one of my absolute favorite things is to overanalyze private moments, especially in an ensemble show like this. And one of the only ones we really get with Lottie where she at least speaks out loud is when she is doing the hunting competition with Natalie, and she comes up to the tree and she touches the symbol and she says, fuck me.
Yeah.
What does that fuck me mean to you in the moment? For her.
In that moment, I think it was stemming from how did she get herself into this situation? She doesn't really want to be here, and she has all this pressure now as she's been put in a position to lead. And going back to the distrust, she doesn't think that she can really do that. She's trying her hardest, but I think she's just getting tired of it. And there were little scenes, I don't think they made them, but there's little scenes here and there. And I talked with Jasmine about this when we were talking through a scene one day. And she was like, sometimes it's not like the big idea of what's happening in the scene. Sometimes I just think into the aspect of like, my character is just pissed off with that one today. Doesn't want to be in like a room with her. So I think it was kind of stemming from that day was just really hard for her. She didn't want to be in this position. She has Mari speaking on her behalf, being like, she doesn't need a gun. She doesn't need this. She's just like, all right. And she is kind of a bit of a pushover in a way that she would be like, okay, let's just go do this and make everyone
happy. My heart breaks for Lottie. It's not fair.
This is why I'll fight to the end of the day when everyone was like, she's evil. She's got bad intention. I'm like, Lottie does everything from the best place. She's trying to give her heart to everyone. It might not come across in the right way sometimes, but she's always well-intentioned, I think.
Hearing you, like, imitate Mari there and then me thinking about the conversation she has with Misty in the finale, it's just shattering my heart all over. I am going to get to that specifically. I have to talk about the Shauna-Lottie fight first. First of all, do you think that Lottie, when she agrees to that, ever in a million years thought it could go that far to the point that she would be on the brink of death?
I think Lottie did know. I do think Lottie knew it was going to get to that point. I think that's why she's been seeing it build up and just the reaction of the whole group, that it's not even just Shauna, it's the whole group kind of needs this. And I think Lottie knows that, and also Lottie has her own guilt, so I don't think she especially... I think she was slightly asking to be, like, punished in a way as well, as another layer of taking it for the group.
Oh, God. That's such a harsh reality for her. My God. I guess the next stage of that question would be, like, let's say, Lottie, after the fight with Shauna, having realized what they had done to Javi in her absence, do you think if she had the opportunity, she would go back in time and handle the Shauna situation differently?
Whoa. It's hard, though, because I don't think... Oh, because it sets off a chain of events, too.
Yeah.
I think she would try it, but I think it would still end up in the same result, even if she did, like, go back and change something.
There's no hope for Javi.
There's no hope for Javi. There's no hope for any of them right now. They're, like, mindset on... That desperation is too strong that I don't think if we change one thing, it would change that much. It might change who died, but...
My head just spins with the supernatural, like, sound of the wilderness conversation of it all. Because I went through all of season one saying to myself that, no, the point of this show is that they think it's some sort of, like, higher power. And it's going to be revealed that it was actually just, you know, human, like, manipulation and evil. And, and nothing else was really going on. And then certain things happen. And I'm like, how do you explain the bear?
I know. This is also me, too, because I agreed with you. I agree with you about first season. And then going into, yeah, second season and things that happen, I'm like, should I be playing it a certain way? Is it something?
Have you all tried to figure out the cards? I know not you're not involved in that playing card scene, but like in terms of what everybody gets.
Oh, I heard that the cards were specific and written. But I saw a theory because originally in the first season when we're playing cards, someone makes a comment that there's no queens in it. And I saw a thread the other day that Javi's the one that brings it back. So, yeah, I don't know. Who pulls what cards? Sorry, that's a big memory question.
It is, and I messed it up in Liv's interview, and it's still making me mad. But I know they pull the Jack of Hearts. I feel like I can repeat some of them because I was also sitting there writing out all the cards in that episode. And then there's also, like, a million cards chosen in the finale. And I was trying to, like, compare to see. Like, I started to think that, like, maybe it's the spade that's the death card. But then that didn't really work out when I looked at the full list.
Yeah, it's interesting, the card thing, because I remember when we were doing press, too, there were images that were going to go out, so don't hate me, Showtime, they didn't end up using them, but of each of us on specific cards.
Interesting.
Or, like, tarot cards, kind of. But people had numbers or jokers and queens and stuff, so... Mm. I am intrigued with that, too.
That's curious.
Maybe it plays into the theories of, like, everyone being like, it's, what's everyone saying that with the symbol? That is, like, a mathematical equation.
Oh. Wait, I have two silly questions. Like, I don't have a piece of paper, so I can't put you to the test. But could you draw the symbol right now? Like, if I had asked? You can?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I had to learn it for a scene, and I feel like it's, yeah, I could draw it.
Like, I can picture it so clearly, but then I tried to draw it. I'm like, that looks nothing like what it does in the show. This is silly. Can anyone in this ensemble shuffle a deck of cards?
I can really well. We haven't really played many card games.
Every time they shuffle for like the death roulette, they're like, I'm like, no.
They should have put me in. I do the whole, like...
There's a more effective way to do it, I promise you all. All right, let's get into the finale specifically. And I'll go straight to the conversations between Misty and Lottie, because I feel like the way Misty talks to Lottie, like, Lottie's had some people push back, but not with that same kind of authority and force. Mm. What was it like finding the right tone for that conversation with Samantha and the right way for Lottie to take hearing that type of thing?
Yeah, it was an interesting scene because I'm still covered in prosthetics. So there's, like, the physicality that also comes with it, which brings, like, a weakness and puts her already at below Misty, kind of, that she can't physically fight back or... And I don't think she's 100% in her right mind either. She was having fevers the night before. But, yeah, I mean, Samantha's, like, magnificent in the way that she plays Misty.
I mean,
every character, I don't think anyone else could play them as well as all our cast do, but... Yeah, Misty, I mean, Sam just
I
has
do that
like
all the time. I am shocked I have not called you Lottie at this point. I think the only time I did it at the junket where was with Tawny, where I meant to say Thais and I might have said Tawny or the opposite. And I'm like, at least it only happened once.
It happens on set all the time. They're like, Quinny, Lottie, but yeah, she has this real strength that I just think comes from Misty being so underestimated. She knows her own power too, which is interesting that she uses it in such a way. She holds on to it as a secret almost. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the dynamic with Misty and Lottie, I think, is something that's probably going to be a bit more played out later on.
I am so curious about that. She's another one that was difficult to come up with questions for, because on the surface she might be doing one thing, but I know deep down the intentions are somewhere else.
Yeah.
All right, so one of the next scenes, at least after the attic conversation, it's when like Lottie admits to the group that she never wanted to be a leader, and she basically convinces them that the wilderness wants someone else to be the leader.
Mm.
In that moment when you're playing a scene like that, how much do you think Lottie believes that that truly is the case, that the wilderness said it is time for another leader and that leader needs to be Natalie, versus her having heard what Misty just said and knowing the influence of her voice and maybe trying to manipulate the group by convincing them that they need to take the attention away from her voice and her power as leader?
Interesting. Yeah, I always had it in the back of my mind as a slight little secret that Lottie was done being leader and kind of just wanted to pass it off to someone else. And a way of doing that was saying that it is the wilderness. But I do think with Lottie, it's always two ideas at the same time. It's half and half. Like, I think it's half that and then half she does think the wilderness maybe chose her. Yeah.
It's always a little of both. No, I get it. All right. I'm moving on to the scene with Juliet on the plane now. I'm really curious about how you play a scene like that, because I feel like whenever we see a character have, you know, a dream or a vision, the other people that they see might be more so representations of like their projections and how they envision them. So when you're playing Lottie in that particular scene, how much is like your true Lottie versus what Natalie might be seeing at the moment?
That's a really good question. I think there is a slight shift, but I don't know if I'm consciously thinking of that. But she is a softer, like, the best version of Lottie that she could be talking to Juliet.
Oh, that's curious.
Yeah.
Okay, so my follow-up to that would be one of her lines is, Natalie, it's not evil, just hungry like us, just let it in. So when you deliver a line like that, even if it's something that winds up changing down the line, do you have to have, I guess, any sort of understanding in what her actually doing that would do to her, like what letting it in would feel like, if that's rest or if there's something more sinister involved?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought about this line a lot and I had a bit of trouble with it when we were doing the scene, because I was like, I don't know what I'm saying and no one's going to tell me what the meaning behind it is. But what was the second half to that question?
I think it was just if you need to know, to know the results of Natalie taking her up on that advice by doing that.
No, I think with this show, you can't always try figure out what the result is, and I kind of just go by what the feeling is in that moment. What, like, that question might bring up in me, more so than trying to figure it out. Because if you try to figure it out, you're going to throw yourself too far left or right, and then you're going to have to backpedal if you were wrong.
You all have your work cut out for you on this show. It's like, it's hard enough to, I feel like that's one of the things about TV that fascinates me in a way that's different from film. It's like film, you get the full script, you know, your character's full arc. Like, not only do you not get that in TV, but in this show in particular, like, a game-changing thing could happen later on that completely redefines a scene you already played.
100%. Yeah, I think that was part of my hesitation with signing on for TV, because I was like, I might like where the character is now, but I don't have any control of where
exactly
she goes But within the first couple of episodes of first season, I was like, oh, sign me up for life. Like, I love this character.
You're in very good hands. Yeah. So this is, like, a little more theory territory again. But the last line of season one for her, shed the blood, my beautiful friends, and let the darkness set us free. What do you think she meant by that in season one? And how might she reinterpret or redefine that statement at the end of season two?
I think they're completely flipped now. For season one, it was coming from a place where I think they're in complete chaos and God, I think now that version of that line is a lot darker and maybe for all of them, but maybe it's directed at the people around her, less so than her being involved. I think the first time she said that line included her. Maybe the second time she's in the second half of it is she doesn't count herself as part of that anymore.
Okay.
I don't know.
I like that thread. That is truly how I kind of interpreted it, too. I'll ask you two more questions before we wind this down, kind of jumping off that point a little. At the end of season two, what do you think Lottie thinks her greatest strength is and her greatest weaknesses?
Who? At the end of season two, I'm not sure if Lottie thinks she has a greatest skill. I think she feels that she's done damage not intentionally. And then her biggest downfall? Probably also that.
Oh, God, my heart for her.
I know, in the finale.
She didn't mean it.
I think she's just like, has no idea where she stands. Like in the last shot where it's all of them standing watching the thing, you just see her laughing. I don't think she really knows what to do. And she's like, burn. Like,
oh, wow.
Sorry.
That is so dark.
Yeah.
But I love it.
All your interviews with us just been like dark as hell.
Oh, pretty much. I feel like also I was especially taken aback by that with Liv, because Van starts with so much mm-hmm. light in her, and it's true. What they say in the show actually happens over the course of it. You see it dimming and dimming and dimming, mm-hmm. and it's heartbreaking to watch something like that happen. All right. This might be a more positive question to finish on,
okay,
then.
I'll try.
Of all of the characters that are left in the 90s timeline, who do you think Lottie would have the most to gain from if she spent more time with that person in season three?
Shauna or Natalie.
Okay.
For different reasons. Shauna, I think, would give her a sense of strength, and I think she would find comfort in her. Shauna is a character that doesn't speak often, but when she does, she has something important to say. She's a watcher, and I think Lottie appreciates that. And then Natalie, I think Lottie admires how truly herself she is. So life lesson-wise, I think those two. But I also feel like, I don't know, I feel a weird tie between the three of them. I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Maybe in season three something will happen. I don't know. That just seems like something that they're dancing around with each other.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'd believe that. I'd be curious to explore that more. I could go on and on with this show. I'm obsessed. You are phenomenal in it. I seriously mean that. The fact that you are able to keep me on my toes but justify everything Lottie thinks, does, and says is not an easy task. So congratulations on Yellow Jackets and everything you've accomplished. And you got to come back for season three.
Thank you. Yes, please. I just want to say you are, like, one of my favorite interviewers. You, like, every time I watch your interviews, you make people, like, drop walls and open up and you don't see that very often in this type of thing. So, and you ask amazing questions that, like, stump me.
I love how I tell everybody to say something good about their own work, and I am just absolute shit at taking,
like,
a compliment. I'm like, I don't know what to say now, so I'll say thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.